Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now, back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel. I'm Carrie Weber here with Father Matt Malone and our friend and colleague Robert David Sullivan. We've been talking about media and the truth, as you know, that sort of sums up pretty much every week in some element.
We're very lucky to have this cover story in the February 20th, 2017 issue of America by Arthur Brooks of the American Enterprise Institute. Confessions of a Capitalist Convert, who I think he doesn't address the issue of the Pope and communications and his views of economics directly, but I think helps get at the heart of these questions. And Arthur is joining us on the program right now.
Hi there, how are you?
Great, nice to have you here, Arthur.
Thank you so much, and thank you for publishing the piece in America. I love the magazine, and I've encouraged people to read it for years and years, and now I can say they even published me.
That's fantastic. That's great. So, Confessions of a Capitalist Convert. This was a really interesting piece because, I thought a very good argument on the economics and on the philosophy, as you do. But this was also a time, where you shared some of your own faith journey. And so I wonder if you could just sort of bring our listeners in who haven't seen or read the piece into what it is that you were trying to do here.
Well, I started off by just talking. I am a convert, but I converted really early. I converted when I was 15 years old, and I had a kind of a semi-mystical experience at the Shrine of Guadalupe and started RCIA, or the conversion process, when I was 16, and kind of to the chagrin of my parents. But it started a life of basically questioning the things that I knew to be true, which was useful to me in a whole lot of ways. And I used that as a way to explain that not long thereafter, I started to question the basis of my ideology, my political beliefs. I come from a liberal, a progressive, democratic home in Seattle, Washington, which is redundant, basically. It's not as if we hated conservatives, but we just had no familiarity at all with free enterprise or business. And I literally did not, when I was in high school, knew not one person who had voted for Ronald Reagan. So it was just an alien world, any other way of thinking. But as I was going through my 20s, after I had unsuccessfully gone through college, dropped out or kicked out, splitting hairs, and I was on the road as a musician, I started taking correspondence courses and of all things economics. I found that in understanding the free enterprise system, I could connect an economic system to my religious views, the whole idea of what it means really to be a Matthew 25 Catholic, to as you did for the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did for me, for people who need opportunity, who need to be lifted up, that the free enterprise system, within adequate bounds and regulation, with a safety net, of course, that it was the best way to lift people out of poverty. And it really changed my whole way of thinking, and it changed my career, as a matter of fact. I left music and became an economist as a result of that. And that's the story I tell in the America piece. Yeah.
Your judgment was that market capitalism with a proper social safety net and with a conscience and with moral actors is actually reflects the principles of Catholic social teaching.
That's right. And it's really important to remember that the arguments you hear that a capitalism is inherently moral or immoral, they're wrong on their face. Both sides are wrong on their face, because capitalism, any ism, any human activity around economics, is a machine. It's like a car. I can use my car for great good to get to work and make a living and support my family and such, or I can use my car for great evil. I can get drunk and drive it through my neighbor's living room and kill them. It really depends on the operator. And capitalism and socialism, these things depend on the operator as well. But when the operator is based in morality, and this is something that Adam Smith wrote way before his Invisible Hand in The Wealth of Nations, 17 years before, he wrote a very famous book called The Theory of Moral Sentiments. in which he talked about proper moral behavior and the duty that we have to take care of each other. And under those circumstances, then the capitalist system can work the best, based on morality, as an expression of our morality, to take care of each other in a spirit of solidarity.
And I guess that was one, this piece, as you can imagine, elicited quite a response from our readers and our online audience. And one of the more common critiques was precisely on that point, which was, what do you say to those folks who say, actually, you know, economics is not value-free, that it does treat human beings as commodities in a labor market, and that has moral implications?
Sure, and every economic system, when it's not grounded in human morality, tends to reflect the worst of the societies that surround this economic system. And so you could find the same thing. I mean, traveled a lot behind the Iron Curtain before the fall of the Soviet Union, and you've never seen such selfishness. You've never seen the avarice that you would find in these systems, where pure power is just rewarded over and over again in ways that we can't even imagine in our free enterprise economy. Certainly that was true in monarchic systems as well. So it's incorrect to say that the free enterprise system inherently embeds values that are selfish. People have values that are selfish. We're fallen. I mean, that's of course what we learn from biblical teaching, and we have to reflect our ability to detach ourselves from many of these impulses, no matter what the system is. So I reject the argument that capitalism is somehow inherently worse. I think that we can ruin anything, but that capitalism is a great innovation when we have our morals in order to use it for great good.
How would you say that we should sort of put our morals in proper order in order to use capitalism for its best good? Because in some ways, I think people would argue that it encourages us to be selfish, perhaps, at times, or that you can benefit from it most if you act in a selfish way. So what should we do to sort of resist that temptation?
Well, you can use any economic system to your own personal gain if you're only looking out for your personal gain. The interesting thing about capitalism is that it ordinarily, when it requires interactions between people, because it doesn't rely so much on political power, it tends to penalize people who are really selfish and avaricious and greedy. But besides that, I mean, it turns out to be the same solution for every economic system. We misquote St. Paul's first letter to Timothy constantly in the 5th chapter and 10th verse. People always say that money is the root of all evil. That, of course, St. Paul says to Timothy, the love of money is the root of all evil. And so remembering that the order of our passions is very, very important. One of the things that I say in the piece is that the world around us gives us kind of a formula. And we as Catholics are confronted by this all the time in advertising or in the TV or the movies. The formula from the world, not just capitalism, just from people, tends to be use people, love things, and worship yourself. Mm-hmm. And the right formula, the Catholic formula, is to use things. That's fine. Enjoy things. Enjoy the world. One of the things that makes us different than a lot of the puritanical Protestant philosophies is we believe in using things and really enjoying them. Loving people and of course, worshiping God. So changing the verbs and nouns around, I think that's the predicate for understanding how any economic system can work for people as opposed to against them.
Did you say that the free enterprise system penalizes selfishness and kind of the obsessive pursuit of money?
It certainly can. One of the things that you find is that in societies, in part of our society in which people are freely doing business with one another, where they don't have a monopoly and they don't have government protection, you find that people who are less ethical tend to be penalized by that. There's actually a reward for having people want to do business with you. It's not perfect. And there are a lot of cases where things are not transparent and where there actually can be corruption, of course, in any system. So I'm not going to make the case that capitalism or any system is perfect in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Right. What about workers unionizing, acting in concert to maybe react against unethical business practices? Should there be a right to organize under free enterprise?
For sure. The free enterprise system is not pure capitalism. The free enterprise system admits that there are market failures. Adam Smith wrote about this a great deal in The Wealth of Nations in 1776, that there are cases of public goods that we want to produce together, of externalities like pollution, of information problems like corruption or crime, and certainly monopolies, where markets fail and where we need collective action in order to rectify these problems. I wish that people were so morally perfect that we didn't need to do that, but in point of fact, we do. So the free enterprise system looks at markets and free markets and adds on market failures with collective action, including through government, to rectify those failures, and it comes up with a system that really serves us best. There's really nothing wrong with collective action on the part of employees. Those of us who do work in this area have a lot more of a problem with collective bargaining in the public sector, not for any philosophical reason, but because it's hard to have management that's actually competing with that when it's the public sector and there's not the management prerogatives. But that's a detail. In point of fact, there's nothing incompatible with free enterprise having to do with labor unions.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We are talking with Arthur Brooks, who has the cover story in America for the issue of February 20th, 2017, Confessions of a Capitalist Convert. And Arthur, it's pretty well known. I mean, one of the most famous critics of the free enterprise system or unbridled capitalism, however one wants to think about it, is the current occupant of the chair of St. Peter. And I wonder whether, you have heard, how do you hear his critique, in his encyclicals and in his various pronouncements? Do you find it compatible with your own view about this system and perhaps your own moral concerns about it? Or does it make you reach for the Malox?
Well, it's mixed, and as you'd expect. I mean, I look at a lot of these issues from the point of view of an American like you, Father, and we can't expect the Holy Father, who's not spent any meaningful time in the United States, doesn't really speak English or have a familiarity with our system, to understand how we see the capitalist system. The greatest exemplar of free enterprise has been in the United States, and it has not been in Argentina. So I understand that people come from a background that's not the same as mine. I have to be sympathetic. That's a basic question of empathy. So even when I hear things that I think are not compatible with the evidence of what we see in the United States, I recognize that people have had a different experience in Argentina and Europe and all over the world. So I try to take it in that regard as well. When there are moments when he writes about this where I think that we have a tendency to go back and forth between matters of faith and morals and issues of politics and policy, and conflating those two areas I think can be problematical. So I think that my job as a Catholic first, and somebody who cares about capitalism in a distant second or 43rd place or something, is to try to work with my church in ways that where we can spread the good things that American free enterprise brings to other places in the rest of the world, to clear up misunderstandings about it, and to listen carefully, because ultimately it's the strength that we bring in conversation with each other that shows the church in its best light.
A lot of people today feel the effects of income inequality very, very deeply. And an interesting aspect of your article is that you talk about it as a little bit more of a textured story, than most people would realize. I wonder if you could kind of expand on that for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really common thing to worry about, that income inequality. It's sort of what everybody knows, is that it's been increasing without bound for a really long time. The data are actually a little bit different than that. What we find is that the equality of consumption, I mean, let me back up a little bit. I don't mean to be a think tank guy on you here, but I will commit that crime just for a second. The income inequality statistics, they look at how much people bring in, how much money they earn before taxes. And the truth of the matter is, how much we consume has a lot to do with how much you're taxed and also what the transfer payments are to you from the government. And you find when you look, you add those two things in, that the equality of consumption in America hasn't changed at all for decades. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. Now, I do care about the fact that people are earning different amounts, because the dignity that comes from earning it, it relates to the very important Catholic concept of the sanctification of work and the returns to work. So it's not just a question of how big your welfare check is. You know, people should be able to earn their living. That's really, really important to me. But I think much bigger than that is what that reflects in, with respect to opportunity. In the United States, what we really care about is opportunity inequality. When people don't feel like they have mobility, they don't feel like they have a password up, that's when they get angry. That's when they get really frustrated. You find that in the United States, we're a remarkably non-envious society, which is wonderful that we can, better than a lot of other societies, we can, you know, anytime we can avoid a deadly sin, I'll take it. The problem is that people tend to get angry about it if they feel that the disparity in returns are unearned, that they're not fair. And there's a lot of that today, and it's I think that it's actually one of our biggest problems is the inequality of opportunity.
What about maybe economic insecurity? People less trusting that they're going to be able to hold a job for a lifetime, or afraid of sudden medical costs or sudden housing costs or something like that. Is that an issue that's separate from the inequality issue?
It's related, although it's also a different public policy issue to the extent that we need programs that give people more security. It's hard to ask people to feel like they want to jump into a new job and create a dynamic economy if they're worried that they can't actually move and not lose their insurance. These are basically policy fixes that we need to attend to in the United States, and that we, much to our discredit, we haven't done that. And so I hope that we will. But the inequality of opportunity question bears on this as well. One of the reasons that people feel so much tremendous insecurity is that they're worried that if they lose their job, they won't be able to find another job. And this is kind of a European mindset. We don't want this in the United States. We want to have enough opportunity that people can change jobs according to their skills and passions, and also people can change jobs when they need to. But you see pretty alarming patterns along these lines. One of the things that we've seen, there's a common misconception that Americans are just really more mobile and moving around than they ever have. That's actually quite wrong. We find that Americans today are literally half as geographically mobile as they were when I was a kid in the 70s. So people move one half as often, and the reason for that is that there just aren't things to move to, and people don't have the skills to match their passions and the economy's needs, and that's what's really lurking behind a lot of the opportunity inequality in this country.
When you were talking earlier, you said that within the church, when we're talking about these issues of economics and social justice, we can sometimes conflate moral concerns or questions of faith and morals with more practical public policy questions, and that can get in the way of the conversation. And it seems to me you have a tough job in the public discourse, because that's also true in the larger secular discourse. I mean, there's this sense that, you know, we tend to see a discourse in which people who are prophets for market economics are seen in a certain way morally, and people who are more socialistically inclined are seen in a certain way morally. And I remember I grew up in Massachusetts politics, and I remember Congressman Barney Frank once saying, "Don't elevate my tactical disagreement with you to a moral one." Right. But it seems like in conversations about economics that we do that a lot.
We do that a lot, and it is hugely problematical. I mean, one of the reasons that we're having such a hard time in the United States maintaining a good competition of ideas is precisely because the moral consensus that we should have has collapsed, and differences in policy and politics are hitting each other head on in an ideological holy war. Hugely problematic. But this is what happens in societies when they forget the moral basis of their political experiment. In the United States, my view is that we should, our the American experiment is all about pushing opportunity to the periphery of society, to use the word that the Holy Father likes to use. And indeed, one of the things that I ask my colleagues to do here, I mean, I'm the president of a think tank that's traditionally known as a conservative think tank, but I ask my colleagues, all 250 of us, to have an examination of conscience, actually. We're not a Catholic place, and so not all of them hear that dog whistle, but that notwithstanding, an examination of conscience where we ask before we go to sleep tonight, did all of my work today go for the benefit of people with less power than me? And if the answer is no, we're messing it up. If the answer is yes, get a good night's sleep and come back ready to fight for free enterprise, fight for the policies that you think are right, but make sure they're motivated from this what should be the moral core of the American experiment, in my view.
That's a really interesting question. I wonder, you spoke earlier about your relationship with your family as a sort of growing up liberal Democrat in Seattle. I wonder, as your economic views changed, how the conversations you had around the topic with your family members changed. Because I know it's a tough thing for people to talk about these days, especially.
It is interesting. My parents sort of figured it out as I was going into my 20s. I was living in Spain, playing in the orchestra in Barcelona at the time, and I came back one Christmas, and I was cooking supper with my mom, and she was really quiet, sort of too quiet, and I asked her if there was something on her mind, and she finally said, "You know, your father and I are very worried about you." And I said, you know what? She says, "Have you been voting for Republicans?" So it was awkward. I mean, they weren't overwhelmingly political, but to the extent that they were, they had pretty conventional views for Seattle. I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I was much more engaged in political conversation with my older brother, who we both recognize that our Christianity. Are shared. He's actually Greek Orthodox.
Wow.
When he was in his late 40s, he converted away from the church that we both grew up in to become a Greek Orthodox. And, you know, this is really what matters. So we just don't have time to get past what matters to get to the things that we disagree on.
Right.
They're details. They're too small. I mean, when we think about our faith and our family and our friendships and the sanctification of our work, boy, oh boy. I mean, there's no time left.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I really liked about the piece, Arthur, was that you wove in this argument about free markets with your own story. And I think, you know, this is one of the few times, or maybe even the first time, that you talked in such a personal way about your faith journey in such a public way. And how did that feel?
It felt pretty confessional, I have to say. I mean, it's when you get you're getting your PhD in economics, they don't say, "Make sure you weave this in."
What's the narrative you're telling?
Exactly right. And I'm also in a secular profession in a secular city, and I run a secular institution. But there comes a time when it's appropriate to do that. When I hear the discourse that's going on in this country, where I think right and left are one thing that they can kind of agree on is that free enterprise has taken a wrong turn. When I hear a lot of the discourse that's coming even out of the church, where I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding about the goods of the free enterprise system, then it then ultimately becomes a chance to stand up. And I have to say, I've gotten a lot of feedback from this piece. Part of it is because America is an important magazine. It has a big place in the cultural dialogue. But part of it has to do with the fact that there are a lot of people who are in the woodwork, I think, who said, "Yeah, I think that too."
Yeah.
And it's been very encouraging, I have to say. If we can have a dialogue as people who love the Lord and talk about how it should be, everything in the kingdom should be to glorify God and to serve our brothers and sisters, including the economic system, then this is the basis for, I think, a productive conversation. And if you guys gave me the ability to start that conversation on my own, I'm so grateful to you.
Yeah, well, we're grateful for the piece, and I think that there's a, you know, I've always felt that if Catholics, who share in common our faith in the Lord and in His Church, can't be freed up by that faith to have a conversation in which we disagree with each other, then we're in trouble. And if we can do it, then we can hold that up. Almost in a evangelical way to the larger culture and say, you know, it actually is possible to have a civil discourse and disagree because what unites us is, in fact, greater than what divides us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a whole moral basis to Catholic life, and we know the rules. And living those rules and making sure that everything else is an instrument of that, disagreeing on the details of those instruments, I think that's good and healthy and right. The Catholic Church has been, as an intellectual force, has been able to have those disagreements and those discussions throughout the centuries. We've sort of shown the way. And it's one of the things that, of course, drew me to the Catholic Church in the first place. So, you know, I'm proud of particularly the American Church, by the way. I mean, I travel all over the world and talk to Catholics in different places, and I honestly believe that the American openness that we have to ideas in our church is a lot of what the world needs.
Yeah.
Showing the competition of ideas the way that we do is, I think, really good and healthy.
Indeed it is. Arthur Brooks is president of the American Enterprise Institute. He is the best-selling author of The Conservative Heart and a contributing opinion writer for the New York Times, and he has the cover story in the February 20th issue of America Magazine. Arthur Brooks, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, and God bless you both.
Okay, take care. Of course, we can... this conversation is not over, I'm sure, because this has elicited such strong reactions among our readers and among our audience. And people can continue this conversation online at www.americamagazine.org, where they can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. They can also read about the possibility of a Russian-NATO conflict if they're...
before they go to bed.
Right.
Good bedtime
reading. Maybe over
books.
Breakfast. They can also read the essay we referred to by Zach Davis on John Oliver and comedy and politics.
Reading.
That's actually probably better bedtime reading. And, of course, they can read Arthur Brooks' piece on Confessions of a Capitalist.
And they can share it on Facebook.
And exactly. And to subscribe to America Magazine, you can also go to americamagazine.org. For Kerry Weber and Robert David Sullivan, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.